Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro call, especially you, Corey. And I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to the recording. Those of you listening to the recording, you sometimes miss some of the stuff that happens before the recording. So we definitely appreciate having you on live, appreciate the discussions. And so glad to have you here. If you ever are going to miss it, then you can of course listen to the call by subscribing to Motor Vitality on whatever podcast application you use, or by going to motorvitality.com and listening to years and years and years worth of archives there. So going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Anybody have any questions? Like, wink, wink, Stacy?
Yes. So that this is on the Lamotte sulfide test kit.
Okay.
Someone's told me to ask you your opinion on how accurate it is, because it goes from 0.2 up for the testing, but I was told that I should ask you about, you could explain it better, but apparently once that actually registers, that it's not registering as high as the sulfur really is.
Okay, so I'd have to do a little more research on this. But here's what I know about the sulfide test. And anybody else that wants to pop in here, please feel free to do so if you have any feedback or anything on this. So, you know, sulfur is, it's a gas.
Yeah.
And so as soon as you pull the sample, that gas starts to leave the solution. So, the longer you let that sample set exposed to open air, the less accurate that test is going to be. Now, it's important to keep in mind that your nose is going to do a much, much better job of detecting sulfur or sulfides than a test. That Lamotte blue case, you're talking about the blue one? So that test only, it only detects it at two parts. And so anything, but you will definitely smell pretty strongly that sulfur underneath, under that two parts per million, you'll definitely smell that. Especially when it's, yeah, go ahead.
It says 0.2, 0.5, 1.0. So is that 0.2, two parts per million?
No, that would be 2.2. It would say 2 if it was there. So I'd read the, if you have the instructions for that, I would read where it's at on the testing. But there's been a lot of times that I've definitely smelled sulfur in the water and did a sulfur test and shown non-detectable. You know, it's not going to come out and say, oh, there's nothing there. Remember, anytime you get a lab test like this done, they rarely say, oh, there's none in there. And in fact, that's something we should be careful about, too, particularly when we're talking about something other than aesthetics, right? So,
right.
You know, to say there's, oh, no, you have none of, you don't have any of that in there is not necessarily accurate. It means, you know, the appropriate term to use when you're doing a test and you're not seeing it is indeed non-detectable. That's what you'll see on most of your lab reports, or you will rarely see not presence or something like that. But so when it comes to sulfur in general, usually those little tests that you have, they're a good place to start with. I can tell you there are some more sophisticated sulfur tests out there that if you're in an area where you run across a lot of sulfur. Northern Ohio, Southern Michigan are places that I've seen where there's just, I mean, you're talking 50 parts per million of sulfur sometimes where it's,
wow.
your eyes will burn. The thing with sulfur is it changes seasonally too. So
yeah.
If you're going to get an accurate reading, if it's coming from the well, then if you're going to get an accurate reading, you can go out one time and test it, and it may be 5 parts per million, and then you go out a month later after a heavy rain or because, you know, the water tables have changed, and you may find 30. And I've seen that become a real problem when you're putting in sulfur systems that max out at a, you know, they're capable of removing 15 parts per million of sulfur. But, it, you know, so they sell the system. It's great because they tested it, and it's fine. You're within that level. And then 3 months later, the sulfur levels are sky high again. You know, they change. So in terms of that little test, though, it's a good indicator. If you see a presence of it, I wouldn't necessarily make a recommendation of a water system based on one test, on that little sulfur test. On the other hand, if it comes out low, if you do that test and it comes out low and or non-detectable in that test, but your nose is definitely smelling the sulfur, that you can treat that level of sulfur really easily. First thing you got to do is determine where the sulfur is coming from. Is it, you know, sulfur producing bacteria from the water heater? Or we just had a client a couple days ago that asked this question to us about, you know, they have one sink in the house, and that sometimes that sink's not often used. You'll get bacteria build up in the overflow drain. The answer is not necessarily just to pour bleach down the drain. It's to put the stopper in, fill the sink up, and let bleach water run down through the overflow, because what happens is you get bacteria from the moisture build up in that overflow, and you run the water, and the smell is coming from those two little holes, you know, or the holes that in the sink. And so, you know, you determine where that sulfur is coming from. That level of sulfur is not going to show up on that little sulfide test kit.
Right.
But
hey, so while we're on that one, what about these sinks that don't have overflow holes? Because I've got an area that the city water is well water, and everybody complains of that rotten egg smell in sinks, especially like first thing in the morning and stuff. But they don't have overflow holes in any of these sinks in this neighborhood.
Mm.
So can I just run bleach down the drain?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to hurt anything. I mean, you're essentially doing, you know, I wouldn't pour a whole jug down.
No.
But, I mean, not that doing that once or twice is going to hurt anything, but it doesn't take much. You know, it does not take much bleach to disinfect anything, you know. So, it's not going to hurt it. That's what the municipalities all over the country do, is they add chlorine to the water. So you're basically pouring bleach down the drain every single day.
if you want to go a more natural route, because some people, especially if they're on a septic, which I know you said they were on city water, but some people are real finicky about using bleach and putting it into the water or into the septic, then you can use like baking soda and lemon juice, or baking soda and vinegar. That helps. It just kind of bubbles everything up and cleans everything out really good.
Yeah, it's what happens when you combine an acid and a base together. That's what's happening. You get little hydrogens and little oxides running towards each other, and when the bubbling is them like grabbing each other and hugging, going, "Yay, look, I found you." But that reaction is in case you were wondering what's happened chemically.
This has been my sulfur issue, but I've got this neighborhood I've been subbing that's city water, because city water is well water, and I can never test positive for chlorine. And one of my customers actually called the city, and they said, "No, we don't put chlorine in the water." I'm thinking, don't you have to?
It might be chloramines sometimes, or that, you know. What you find are the people that answer the phone, you're talking to at the front desk, you always run into that. They, you know, you call somebody where you know there are polyphosphates in the water and ask them if they add polyphosphates to the water. You know, nobody has any, they don't know, you know, they don't know, they've never heard of polyphosphate. So, but good question, Stacey. That's good. Did that answer your question or help at all?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out a best, because they started having a sulfur problem back in the fall, and it's still, I tested 0.5 on the Lamont test, inside and outside of the water.
Yeah. Well, that's enough. That 0.5 is probably a safe enough number that you could put in an aeration system. Remember, you can't use it with berm in with sulfur. So berm and sulfur don't get along. But they do make systems. Your manufacturer in particular makes a system that, that will handle that level of sulfur, I think, without a problem.
That's what I quoted. The reason this came up was we've had some other people quote the combo softener system that we have that supposedly handles up to 2 parts per million. And I'm like, don't worry. I didn't quote that because I know better. It's not going to handle truly handle real sulfur. Steve was saying call Kelly because he's like, he understands it.
See, I figured it was Steve Paul. Put me on the rope.
So take that as a real compliment when he sends me to you, okay?
Yeah. All right. Or sign of desperation. What other questions do we have? Anybody else?
Yeah, Kelly, a good, I hope you can hear me okay. A good.
Please.
This is a good segue. Perception when you're testing hydrogen sulfide is, you know, you can go into the world of, oh, if it shows up this number on a chart, it's going to be an issue. But if you smell it, testing doesn't always show it, and your perception of how you perceive it to the customer is going to help sell it better.
Absolutely. Chris, you're right. That is a perfect segue into today's topic, because that's exactly what we were going to talk about. And you know, I kind of mentioned it when I mentioned what the topic was going to be pre-recording, and I talked about it in terms of hardness, but you're exactly right that is the case with other things as well. So there's a couple things here. Let me first off explain what I wanted to talk about today, and then we can kind of discuss the context of where it becomes relevant. So you're right. Perception is what I kind of wanted to discuss. And what I mean by that is when I was in sales, I started off, I always think it's kind of interesting because I was in a rural area. There was no municipal water in my sales territory. I was in, it's not entirely true. There was a little community well, like a village well, that still had 23 grains of hardness and 2 parts per million of iron in it. So it was a municipal water supply, but it was, came from, there were 4 wells that they pulled from and it was just like all the other water around the area. So I, you know, every house, when I went out and I tested water that only had 15 grains in it, listen to me say that, only 15 grains. I thought that was amazing to me because most of the samples that I had, the average house that I went out and treated had between 1 and 4 parts per million of iron. And sometimes, I mean, I would see up as far as 8 or 10 parts per million of iron, sometimes as low as you know, half a part, but usually always at least 1 part per million of iron. And there would be 20 plus grains of hardness. I saw that all the way upwards of like 75 grains of hardness. It was just a well water area. Now, I will also tell you that there were a couple little sections in my sales territory where there was naturally soft water. They did have iron in the water still, but no hardness, but they had methane, meaning the water was flammable right out of the faucet. That was pretty cool too. But my point is that when I would go in, so Detroit City Water, every once in a while I would get a referral up into the Detroit metropolitan area where Detroit City Water, and Detroit City Water consistently was 6 to 7 grains of hardness and not an aware market at all. Meaning, you know, Detroit always did a really great job of marketing how great their water supply was. They sent it out in the consumer confidence reports. You know, it was all over the news that Detroit just did a really great job of, you know, they had some of the best water in the country. And so it wasn't an aware market. People, and the truth is, when I was used to doing 7 grains of hardness, I would go out used to doing 20 plus grains of hardness, I would go out and I would see 7 grains of hardness, and I would think that it was not that bad either. In fact, I can tell you that there were several appointments that I had, opportunities that I had on that 6 to 7 grain municipal water, where all I sold was a reverse osmosis system. Because exactly what you're saying, Chris, is kind of the way, you know, in perception. Now, it is true, when you put a new person, if you've trained a new sales professional using kind of that traditional script that we all hopefully have learned at some point and seen, where they're going out and doing the, you know, they're using that hardness chart. I mean, does anybody know where 7 grains falls on that hardness chart? Anybody know that off the top of their head?
Moderately hard.
You can keep going. 7 grains is considered hard. Just not even moderately. It's considered hard. So
yeah.
Seven
to 10.5 is hard. Over 10.5 is extremely hard.
Yep, exactly. So 6 is kind of moderately hard, but 7 is at that hard level. Okay. So, you know, and when you think about it, you know, you think about it in terms of an aspirin tablet. You know, an aspirin tablet weighs approximately 5 grains. And so you've got 1.5 aspirin tablets worth of dissolved rock for every gallon of water that you run through your pipe. So the reality is that 7 grains of hardness is going to do substantial damage to their plumbing. Go look at any house on 7 grains of hardness and look at their faucets. Look at their shower doors. Look at the damage done. Look at how much soap their dishwasher owner's manual tells them to use. You know, look at all the stuff that 7 grains does. But yet, when I went out there as somebody that had been doing it a long time, somebody that was used to dealing with hard water, my perception was that that's not that hard. You know, it's not that bad. All you need is an RO. Well, you could benefit from a softener, but really what you need is a reverse osmosis, most importantly. I think back to that, and I think, God, what did I do for those customers? I just put in an RO that's going to have a lot more problems. That's going to the membrane's going to foul faster. You know, it's going to have to work harder. I did a disservice to those customers. And that's when I get taught by those new people who come in that are still using that hardness chart, that are still using their script, that are still going, you know, that are using the basics. They haven't learned all the shortcuts, you know, that we veterans in the industry tend to learn, right? They're still going out there using that stuff, and they're selling circles around me because they're actually presenting to the customer what it needs. This lesson was most learned. I learned this lesson. I think I grammatically say this correctly, but I remember I went and spent some time, and I had been doing, you know, I'd been in this industry a long time, 6-7 years already. But I went down to Orlando, Florida, and I spent some time with the dealership in Orlando riding with their sales guys. Now, this particular company, their turnover was crazy. I mean, they only provided house leads for their salespeople. They had no territories. The salespeople would come in, and I mean, there was one day that I rode with one of their sales guys down there, and we spent like 6 or 7 hours in the car to run 4 appointments. And it was an extremely long day, just driving all over from place to place to place, completely disorganized. And they did that 2-hour presentation on, you know, hour and a half, 2-hour presentation on every sales call. The thing that really was amazing to me was that in Orlando, they had 3 grains of hardness. Yet, these customers, this is what really opened my eyes. They did the hardness test where they ran it through the mini and had the soft water comparison with the hard water. They did that hardness test, and these customers, they were reacting the same way with water that had 3 grains of hardness in it, and the soap and the scum and the film that when I did that soap demo on 20 grains of hardness, I saw the same things. they were reacting the same way. They were like, wow, that's amazing, because three, four grains of hardness took away the suds, just like the water with the 20 grains of hardness in it did. It still did the same thing. And these guys who had, on average, a month, 2 months, maybe 3 months of experience that I was out there riding with, they were doing this in every home, and the customers were blown away with it, saw the value of a water softener. And by the way, their average ticket for a whole house system was like almost $6,000 with this company, because they were putting in carbon filters, a softener, and an RO. You know, it was a very, very high-priced ticket item. And customers were buying it. Now, fast forward, I can tell you when I came and worked with this client on Long Island, most of the municipal water is that 3 to 5 grains of hardness as well. And you would think when you're talking to some of these people that is the hardest, most, destructive water ever. And when I talk to people that have sold, you know, that are out there working on 3 or 5 grain water, and I tell them that my water, in fact, I'm curious, is there anybody on this call right now that has ever tested water that was 25 or 30 grains hard?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am, Kelly.
Yes.
Okay, good. Is there anybody that hasn't tested water with 30 grains hard? All right, so we have that. So, I it's amazing how often, and Jen, you could probably attest to this, how often do we run across that where we are running into salespeople when we tell them, you know, that, oh, my water was 25 grains hard, or that water was 25 grains hard. How often are they going, holy moly, nobody says holy moly. So that's just to let you know that I don't think I've ever met anybody out there other than me that says holy moly anymore. Jiminy Christ, really? Wow. Wowzers. That's, so, but it is, Jen, would you agree? We run across that.
Oh, yeah.
How do people
Definitely.
React?
Oh, they're shocked. Especially if we're working with somebody on the East Coast, you know, they're like, whoa.
Yeah. So here's where we get to what you were saying, Chris, to your point about the way we present it. Okay. Notice the reason those new people, the people that came in without my experience, but using the basics, using that script that we learned, that using, still pulling out a laminated copy of the hardness chart, or using that on digital, on a digital format, you know, where it shows that actual hardness chart, where they're staying to those basics. Why is it that they are able to sell a system, a softener, and to help that customer, I mean, really genuinely help that customer, save them money on soap and everything else, whereas us experienced people that aren't doing that, aren't selling that? It's because they are making it the customer. They're allowing the customer to determine that, not us. See, when I'm going out there and going, that's not that bad, the customer's taking my cue on that, as opposed to me presenting the information and allowing the customer to make their own determination based on the evidence that they see, based on the evidence that I have presented. The soap flask, the dishwasher owner's manual, the hardness chart. Okay, I've got to talk about it. I've got to present it for what it is. The truth is, 6 grains of hardness, 7 grains of hardness is going to do damage. Even 3 grains of hardness is going to make their skin dry and itchy. It's going to clog their pores. It's not going to be as bad as 20 grains, but it's still, that's because 20 grains is really, that's twice as hard as extremely hard water. You know, so that's because perspective. So when we go in, And I do see new salespeople do this as well. They'll go in sometimes and they'll say things like, oh, this is the worst water I've ever seen. Customers, that has the opposite impact. Now, it may be the worst water you've ever seen. Maybe you have never tested 30 grains hard before. And you go, wow, I've never seen water this hard before. What would you think if a salesperson in another that was trying to sell you something for another product came in, especially if they're sitting there talking. I mean, your first question would be, how long have you worked in this business? You know, and if they go, I've been here 10 years or whatever, and you've never seen this, that sounds like a line of BS, don't you think? Even if it's true, so, doesn't it kind of make you suspicious?
That's exactly what my sales rep said 19 years ago. I've never seen water this hard, and I'm sitting here going, dude, don't BS me. I'm buying a softener, okay?
Yeah. No, right. It screams either inexperience or BS. So when
I now know that. But
I mean, if your doctor said, wow, I've never seen anybody is in bad health as you. You're going, really, thanks. I appreciate that. So it is important that, you know, and we were talking about it, Chris, you mentioned sulfur, you know, it's kind of the same thing. That, you know, when you are going out there, take the test, take the evidence, and then think about what our standard is. Okay. Is 7 grains considered hard water? I mean, just it's a yes or no. Somebody pop out the answer. Is 7 grains considered hard water?
Yes.
Yes.
What is the treatment? What is the treatment for that?
An ion exchange system.
Yeah, a water softener, right? So so that's that is where we have to overcome our own perception, and it's our job, it's our responsibility to stay with the facts. When we go in there, we've got to do the test, we've got to present the test, and then we've got to present the solution to the customer and stay with that. I mean, we can't allow our past biases to, it's not our story, it's the customer story, and every single one of them is a new scenario. It's a new opportunity for us to present the evidence and the solution and allow the customer to make the decision. Thoughts on this? Comments?
Kelly, I started to see us do the same thing in our company. So I made a brochure that showed hardness, TDS, and then softeners, and then ROs underneath it. So, and every time anybody presented any equipment, the chart is right there. So it made us do the test, use the chart, and then we grew from the chart into whatever equipment we'd be looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Anybody else? Any other final thoughts on this? I would encourage you guys, and listen, you guys are all on this call, and you're talking to people. I mean, Chris, you're from the, you know, kind of the East Coast. Corey, you're in Iowa, you know, way out there. You've got, Stacy, you're in Midwest and Indianapolis. You know, there are people on this call right now, and I don't know who else is on here, but there are people from all over the country right now. And so this is a good place to kind of talk to people and learn and get different perspectives. But I would encourage you guys to, you know, you have a day where you just feel like you're in learning mode, pick up the phone and call. Well, talk to your rep. Talk to your rep, whoever your manufacturer rep is, and see if, and start there. You know, stay within your manufacturer if you want to. But pick up the phone and call a dealer from across the country and ask them what their water's like. Ask them what they do. Learn about it. Get out of your bubble and become an expert and learn. It will help your perspective. It did wonders for me when I started going out and seeing how different water was for different areas of the country. It made me realize that I, you know, exactly this. It helped more than anything. It helped with my perception to be able to talk to people from, you know, that were treating different types of water all over the country. Any final thoughts or comments? Well, that's the time then, you guys. I so appreciate you guys coming on. This is another week where we didn't send out a reminder call, and yet we had a bunch of you on here and great participation in the conversation. I really love that. So truly honored on behalf of the entire Motor Vitality team. I want to say thank you sincerely. Everybody be safe, and we will talk to you next week, if not before. So thanks, everybody.
Thanks.